You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the country. And I've got one of the main influencers right here, one of the guys that pushes all the buttons behind an incredible organization called the Seattle Study Club, Greg Tice. And we're going to be talking about the single missing ingredient to becoming the complete clinician that a lot of dentists skip over. And you're not going to want to skip over this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a second.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
All right. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. And this is going to be super fun. So I know a lot of you are on the path of trying to get better when you go to courses. And a lot of you do take a ton of CE, but there's a missing ingredient. And we're going to give it to you today in this episode. And I've got the guy who is the conduit or the catalyst behind it. And he's learned a few things behind an amazing organization called the Seattle Study Club, Greg Tice. Greg, thank you very much for being on. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Hi, everyone.
Now, the Seattle Study Club, if you haven't heard about it, it's one of the most amazing organizations, brilliant business model. A periodontist by the name of Dr. Michael Cohen came up with it, and it's truly one of the most brilliant business models that's ever been created. And for some of you, you might know a small piece of it. He created a system in which the world's best educators come to you in your town, no matter where you live. You're within driving distance. And there's over, I think, Greg, 200 clubs all over the world, Japan. Yep. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But that's not even the biggest benefit of it. So the world's best educators come to you in your own town. Now, here's what we're going to do. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you have questions, feel free to ask them. And I'm going to get Greg to answer them himself. But I'm going to tell the story of Greg Tice. So everybody knows, as a speaker, as an educator, if I can get in the Seattle Study Club, that's an amazing opportunity. It's a privilege. It's an honor. And it's actually kind of nerve-wracking because those guys are the best clinicians in the world. I can speak to strangers anytime, but speaking to them is nerve-wracking. So I stalked you for years and sent you videotapes. And I don't know if this is true, but I feel the story myself that you just threw my videotapes in the trash. And then one day I get a call from your office. My team was joking. They're like, oh yeah, they called. And I'm like, they did not. And they're like, oh my gosh. I'm like, what's up? And now, you know, you and our friends, you know, 10 years ago, you invited me to come Seattle Study Symposium, changed my life, changed a lot of people's lives. So for those of you that don't know, who's Greg Tice and who is the Seattle Study Club?
I'm the managing director of Seattle Study Club. I've been with Seattle Study Club and Michael for 22 years now in January. And prior to that, I was actually a concert promoter, tried to run my own event production company, not so successfully, but then came to Dr. Cohen and the Seattle Study Club Symposium first. And I've kind of grown up with the organization over the last 22 plus years and was really struck by the quality of individual that's attracted to the local Seattle Study Club. I started actually with Michael on January 5th, 1995. And 17 days later was the second annual symposium. I had no dental background. I had no connection to dentistry whatsoever, but had done some conferences in the past. But the people that I was around at that symposium, the Neil Stars, the Tony Roses, just wonderful clinicians who were so open with one another and talking about real world things. It wasn't like shaking your hand and saying, oh, you know, life's great, everything's wonderful, like you see it so many of the state meetings and other meetings. They were getting down to the nitty gritty of what's working, what's not working. How do I do this? How do I change what I'm doing to get better at what I'm doing? And being around people who are willing to do that, who feel safe enough to do that, is addicting. It's like Michael was a drug dealer. Mm-hmm. He gave me the first taste for free and I was hooked for life.
Right. Yeah, I'm a junkie if he's a drug dealer. So you use the word, the handshake. There's not a lot of handshakes that go in a meeting like this. And that's really the special thing. And I was kind of taken back because when I went 10 years, I'm like, oh my gosh, these people are like, they're not friends. They're dear friends. And so that's the one thing. I mean, the education obviously is world class. The food is even world class. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world. But the one thing you walk away from is you go, wow, these are really good people, like amazing people. And they're so willing to give. And so there's a lot of hugs and even a lot of kissing going. I mean, my wife is like, you kiss too many men. I'm like, I love these guys. You know what I mean?
You've never kissed me.
Well, I mean, but you know what I mean? It's just a lot of fun in a really, really good way. So now you and I have talked about this a lot. I want to go heavy into this because people take tons of CE, tons. Like there are CE junkies out there and you can go to COIS, you can go to great meetings, but there's a missing ingredient. Like take me through that because you've seen some of the best clinicians in the Seattle Study Club Symposium. Let me say one more thing. You're coming on your 25th, is it 25th anniversary this year?
25th anniversary this year, yes, this coming January.
So you've had a little experience, let's
just
say.
Just a little.
What's the missing ingredient to becoming the complete clinician?
Well, so it's really two components, but we'll start with the primary, and that is expectations. Most people go to a CE program, whether it's the State Meeting Society, a study club, any program, and their expectations are that they're going to go to the CE program like this. They're going to sit in the back of the room, hope they can stay awake for the meeting and feel good about themselves because they're being educated, because they're, you know, they're sitting there, yeah, I'm learning something. This is good stuff. The problem with that is that the way our brains work, it doesn't change behavior. And that's what we should be looking for in continuing education. Most people carry some mental baggage with the words continuing education. It is lecture-based. It's the pharma lecture, or it's the, you know, it can be a great clinician speaking. But when you think about how the brain works, the only information that gets through is information. When I'm sitting and listening, when I'm passive learning, the only information that gets through is information that fits what I already know, that fits the beliefs I already have.
Yeah.
And if what the clinician on screen or on stage is saying doesn't fit what I already know or what I already believe, not only do I discount it, my ability to recall and use it is non-existent. It doesn't filter through our reticular activating system, through the physical neural net we have.
Right. That's brilliant.
The key there is to find a way to engage with other individuals in debate, in dialogue, in discussion, in problem solving, in treatment planning. When we're engaged in dialogue, our blinders come off. We're forced to examine the other possibilities. We may disagree, but it gets through that filtering system. So from an expectations standpoint, that's the first thing that's got to change. People go in and they expect a lecture. They need to think about their continuing education more like it was a martial arts class or cooking lessons or guitar lessons. I don't take guitar lessons to get an idea about the guitar, which is how many people approach continuing education, right? People will say to themselves, I'm going to go to this CE program. And if I walk out of there with two or three good ideas, I would count that a valuable experience. And I think most people listening right now would agree with that statement.
Right.
Would you agree with that statement?
Totally agree with that statement.
Okay,
hey,
so I'm going to cut you off there. You got to get rid of that.
Well,
it's a waste of time.
Right. Because people do think that way.
Yeah, but what's the value of a good idea? The value of a good idea is the value of a warm fuzzy.
Absolutely.
And if you want a warm fuzzy, stay home and take a bath. It will last longer. Think about all the courses you've ever been to. I can think about all the courses I've ever been to. I have drawers full of notes of all the great things I wanted to start or wanted to do, but how many of them actually got implemented into the way I work, the way I interact with my family, with my kids, with my staff, with my team. That's the value of a good idea. When I take guitar lessons, I don't want to get an idea about the guitar. I want to learn the major chords to Kashmir so I can play some Led Zeppelin.
Which I love. Yeah.
That's how we need to think about continuing education. And if we approach it that way, when we come into these courses, we're actually going to change the way we're listening, and we're going to expect more dialogue, discussion, engagement, which is where the real learning happens, where we start to change behavior.
Buddy, that is so good. Now, I have so many questions on this, okay? And I'm sure that the people that are watching, if you're watching this, I'm sure you have questions too. So two program notes. Number one, we are shooting this live on Facebook. So please ask your questions. I love your questions. And I'll ask Greg. I'm going to watch the feed on the side. And I'm happy to ask Greg the question while we're here. And even ask the question later if you're watching this on a replay. Now, I want to go back to a couple things. When you talk about the filter in which you experience education, you know, you're taking this experience from being one-dimensional now to multidimensional when you take this in. And that is so incredibly true. It's transformational, don't you agree?
Absolutely. There is some very interesting research now being done out of the Max Planck Institute in Berlin, a brilliant research facility for human development and really the way the brain works. And what they're finding is that as human beings, we operate on autopilot. They call it default programming, but autopilot between 50 and 80% of the time. And many people approach life, behavior change, education as forcing ourselves to consciously think about things differently. But if we are hardwired to operate on autopilot 80% of the time, the real key to behavior change is changing the habits, changing the way we operate on autopilot to expand the sphere of influence where we're operating with the blinders on autopilot rather than trying to force ourselves to think outside the box. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's about habituation and creating new habits, not about constantly thinking about how you're thinking. That's almost impossible to do because as human beings, we're hardwired differently. We're hardwired to operate 70 to 80% of the time automatically without thinking, without making a conscious decision. It's the subconscious that's controlling our behavior.
Right. And that's one of the biggest benefits. Well, to anybody as they start to mature is your thinking gets better. Now, I want to talk about format too, because if I'm a young dentist and I'm watching this, okay, because I do get this question. People are a little confused. They go, well, Seattle Study Club, do I have to go to Seattle? Like, what is that? Because it's not the education, the format you guys have. One of the biggest things that's transformation, life-changing, is actually treatment planning. You're treatment planning with other people right around you with the specialists and everything. Can you go into that a little bit?
I think part of the beauty of the Seattle Study Club is the way we structure what we would refer to as the curriculum. So any given study club year, and we use that word very deliberately, curriculum, because it's designed to help move people predictably from point A to point B over the course of time.
Right.
And a typical curriculum outside of the Seattle Study Club network, and there, as you mentioned, 250 Seattle Study Clubs around the world, the vast majority in North America. But the typical non-Seattle Study Club curriculum is bringing in two or three speakers over the course of a year, inviting everyone to participate and hoping they learn something and change the way they practice. And it's not a realistic expectation. So your Seattle Study Club curriculum is 9 to 10 programs a year. So September through May or June, one program per month. So over the course of any given study club year, as I mentioned, you're going to have 9 or 10 programs, roughly 4 to 5 weeks apart. Because really what we're trying to do is create the consistency of going back to school, of going back to class, right? Of, oh yeah, I've got class next week, as opposed to, oh crap, there's another meeting next month.
Right.
So once a month gives us that consistency. of those 9 to 10 programs, then 2 to 3 of them, and really 2 to 3 max, are full-day lecture programs where you're bringing people in from the outside to bring new information, to bring new knowledge, new speakers, full-day lecture programs. The balance of the sessions are evening programs that are built around interaction. For the doctors, it's primarily clinical interaction, but there is team programming as well. And that's where the real learning takes place.
Right.
When they can sit down, 2 to 3 of those are treatment planning sessions. When they can sit down, a case is presented. We break them into 2 or 3 smaller teams, 6, 7, 8 people on a team. And they discuss the ideal treatment options for this case, for this patient. We're forced to take those blinders off, discuss, debate, analyze the different possibilities. And when I say to you, Kirk, this is a pretty straightforward case. I do A, B, C, and D, and here's why. And you say to me, hopefully you'd be nicer than this, but you'd say, Greg, you're an idiot.
Right.
I wouldn't touch A, B, and C, and here's why. I might do D, but not until I'd done X, Y, and Z. Right. You're taking me out of autopilot mode and helping me examine the other opportunities and possibilities.
Right.
As I do that, I become more comfortable. It naturally changes the subconscious picture I'm holding about how I treat patients, about what I'm comfortable with.
Right.
And it's the engagement and the repetition that creates behavior change.
Yeah. Now that is truly awesome. So I had Dr. James Woodyard on last week, who's really one of the best periodontists anywhere. And he said, you know, in his club, when he did it, it was mind blowing because he was like, I thought we were all on the same page. Wait a minute. Like, let's get all calibrated too. And what he does, which a lot of your club directors do, is they get people to think. He doesn't necessarily always give them the, he'll pull them out of the mud when they get stuck, but he'll go, why do you think that's happening? And the young clinician will go, well, that would be, and he'll be like, exactly. Now, how do we work together in community, which is really what you're doing? You're creating an incredible, like, micro communities. And I heard Dr. Cohen say this years ago. He said, the success of the Seattle Study Club doesn't start up here with me. Obviously, I make a lot of the decisions. It happens at the cellular level in each one of these clubs where it comes alive. And you don't have to be the best dentist in the world. Like, some people are like, well, I don't know if I want to do that because, you know, I'm still working on my skills. That's where it's crazy important. You get around with other people because they'll pull you forward. They'll make you better through what you're talking about, the engagement and the interactions that happen monthly.
Well, the people that are attracted to this aren't necessarily the best of the best clinicians. They're not all at necessarily that level, but the people that are attracted to this are people that are looking to get better. They're continually looking to progress, to improve, to become more effective at what they do. And they recognize that you can't do it by yourself and you can't do it by sitting and listening. You have to engage with your peers. You have to engage with like-minded individuals who are approaching cases comprehensively. And that level of discussion helps change the way you would practice dentistry.
Right. I mean, we could go for 2 hours on this. And even James said this last week. He said, you know, single biggest missed opportunity in dentistry, everyone's looking at me, but it's diagnosis. You know, when we work together and just look at the concept of the diagnosis and behaviorally rework this. I mean, there's a mountain of opportunity within your own practice. So I guess I'm saying that for this reason. If you're a 32-year-old dentist watching this, you're like, why do I need a study club? Couple reasons. Number one, you can't be successful on your own. Human beings are not designed to be successful on your own. Nobody watching this has a successful practice. They go, no, I answer my own phones. I'm out my own models. I do my own hygiene. I'm killing it. No one says that, right? Or no one says, yeah, I've raised all these kids by myself. It's awesome. They're very healthy. You know, you need the help of other people around you. Number one. And number two is that you become the average of the 5 people you hang around with most. So I think it's crazy important that once a year you go, hey, look, I got to audit who I'm around. And I got to up my game because I come to symposium. I'm like, man, I got to up my game. These guys are serious students.
Oh, absolutely. And we do like to say you become like those who you surround yourself with. That's the terminology to the 5 people you hang out with. And the beauty, again, of any study club, especially when there's engagement or interaction, is the older clinicians are learning from the younger clinicians. The younger clinicians are learning from the older clinicians because everybody's bringing a different perspective to the table. So to the 32-year-old out there, I would say, whether it's Seattle Study Club or not, get involved in a study club where there is engagement, where there are other clinicians coming to the table, because you will learn you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You'll learn from the experiences and the challenges they've had and how they've gotten past them.
Right.
And to me, one of the greatest things is we get letters like this occasionally from older practitioners who basically are saying, you know, I was ready to hang it up until I joined the study club. And I've got a renewed energy. I'm reinvigorated. I'm excited about dentistry again because of the people I'm around.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest challenges in dentistry is, especially for the clinician, it is a very isolating industry. You practice in your own little fiefdom, in your own little kingdom, and rarely is there an opportunity to get out and interact with peers in a safe environment where it's not just shaking hands, where it's like, oh man, I'm really struggling with this, or I had this fantastic experience. Let me share this with you because this was awesome.
Right.
You know, they don't get that anywhere else. It's the same feeling they had when they were in dental school, when all of this new, exciting, challenging information is coming to them and they have their peers around them. The term Michael likes to use, which I think is highly apropos, is Seattle Study Club is school for dentists who don't have the luxury of going back to school.
Wow.
And when you think about it in those terms, as a school, as a university without walls, you think about the emotional connection you had to your university days, a lot of that was because of the people you were around, because of the experiences you shared with other individuals.
Right.
That's the study club environment.
Love it. And so that means in any town, anywhere, you can get the behavioral component. One more thing. Now, I want to go back to this. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So I'm a 32-year-old dentist again, because that's we're getting a lot of young dentists watching these things. So behavioral. Now I'm 32. I don't need behavioral. I don't need behavioral. Speak to that. Like, first of all, what is behavioral? Can you define that? Because at 32, I might not understand. I'll tell you, I was a moron when I was 24. Somebody told me to take a course. I'm like, I don't need to take that course. And then I'm like, wow, because I've learned this. I call it, I don't have another frame for this other than the arrogance of youth. When I was in my 20s, I had it all figured out. No one could talk to me. Then I turned 30 and I'm like, wow, there's a lot I don't know. And then I turned 40 and I don't even know if I know anything. But the point is this, is that we're always in this process or in this flux. And it might be awareness might be a good place to start. As you start to become aware as you're growing your practice, wow, there's a lot more skills that I need than just clinical. So what is the behavioral component of dentistry? Can you define that?
Yes, although I would not term it the behavioral component of dentistry. Again, the phrase we use is creating a complete clinician, sort of the title of this. And the important thing from a continuing education, from a growth standpoint, is that as a human being, you're not focusing solely on one area. So when you're looking at continual improvement, at becoming progressive, becoming effective and authentic human being, you need to think about how the behavioral sciences affect the way you interact with your team, the way you interact with your patients. What about health and well-being? What about treating patients with heart disease? What about your own postural assessment and the physical toll that dentistry takes on you as a clinician? What about business and financial management? Right. What about personal development, becoming a better leader, creating a better execution? Again, coming back to the business side, how do I simply read my profit and loss statement? And what does that mean? What are the ratios that should be there? All of those components can be delivered locally in a study club environment. But again, most people, if they take a course like that, are taking a course and sitting and listening. They're not engaging in discussion. They're not engaging in dialogue. And here's the example I'll use with you, Kirk. You presented at symposium this last January in Orlando, Florida.
Yep.
I listened to your lecture and I was there for the whole program. It is now what, 2.5 months later, 2 months later? I can't tell you what you said.
Okay.
I can remember how you made me feel. Mm-hmm. And if I go back and review my notes, I will start to recall. But just because I went to a great program and was inspired or motivated doesn't create behavior change.
Right.
You need that support system. You need that to become a complete clinician, to become a well-rounded practitioner and human being. You need all of those components. It needs to be easy for you to access. And that's why the local level of a study club is important.
Yeah. Now, let me poke some holes, too, in the whole study club thing, because if you're a dentist, you're watching this, you know, study clubs traditionally have problems. They naturally have problems because if you started one 10 years ago, you know how hard this is. Like, it's just hard. It's hard to keep. If you're not careful, running a study club can turn into babysitting, and then people show up and they end up taking information and not necessarily contributing. And what a lot of study clubs used to do years ago is people just go, I can't do this anymore. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. The goodwill and the effort and the thought process was nice behind it, but it became such a hard task for me. Why have you guys figured this out? Like, you have a model that has been sustainable for a very long time. And you were talking about the one dentist. I mean, you've got dentists that have stayed in this for a very long time. And you used the word easy. Like, what have you figured out that the rest of us don't know about a study club model?
Two components. It's about the relationships and it's about behavior change. So if we're creating that safe environment where people are comfortable getting together with one another, then they do interact. And we have the programming built to help create that safe environment where people share critical and important information with one another regularly. Mm-hmm. So from a longevity standpoint, that's essential to the life of a study club. I've been doing this 22 years. We're going into our 25th anniversary with Symposium. Dr. Cohen has been running his study club since 1977, before most people listening were born.
I was seven.
I hate you for that. And many of our clubs have been with us 23, 24, 25 years. And I was actually speaking at a study club in Boston this last fall. This study club was in its 21st year. They were starting their 21st year this last fall. I had 18 or 19 doctors in the room for an evening program we were doing. Of the 18 or 19 that were there, 16 of them had been there all 21 years from the very beginning. And they're there that long because they recognize the value of what they're getting, of what it's doing for them in their personal life, in their professional life, with their families, with the way they treat patients, and really from the friendships that they're developing with these individuals as well. There is a connectivity amongst the clinicians in the group that keeps these things alive and vigorous for years and years and years. And it's that combination of interaction, but of a constantly changing curriculum that keeps them coming back. It's not the same programming every single year. And you're absolutely right. Treatment planning is one of the most fabulous opportunities for changing behavior, for real learning. But if we do treatment planning every single meeting, we're going to burn people out. You know, look, I love pizza. I love pizza. But if I have pizza every single night, eventually I want a steak or I want chicken or, God forbid, a salad. But we need to change up the experiences and the topics. Otherwise, it's not sticky. People don't keep coming back.
Yeah. I mean, we could get a good debate here. I think I could eat pizza, but you're right. We should have a pizza contest for how long we could do that. But you're right. You know, you gotta mix it up. Now, also, I'm just going to piggyback on this too, because you know this, if you're watching this, you work hard at dentistry, you get into the zone, you love dentistry. It can be quite isolating, like you mentioned before, Greg. Now think about that club. I wrote this down. Of those 16, like think about the relationships those people have. Now I can't speak for being a woman. I've never been a woman, but I can speak for males. You know, once you become a hard charging male and you really focus on your business, you can get to a place where you don't really have a lot of friends if you're not careful about that, that you don't talk about a lot of other things with. Think about the relationships that these guys, I know the club that you're talking about, those guys don't like each other. They love each other.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And that's pretty special when it comes to your community and what you're doing. And also too, I'll speak to the perfection thing. One of the cool parts about growing and develop as a complete clinician with some of these other people is you can protect yourself from some diseases like perfectionism, because it can be a disease.
Oh, absolutely. And you learn how to think about yourself better. One of my favorite programs that study clubs do is what we call a problem solving session. And it's really built like this. It's an evening meeting, you know, dinner meeting. And what the members of the club are told is that they must bring a clinical problem with them in order to eat. Ooh. And we won't feed you if you don't bring a problem with you. But the idea here is, as you mentioned, these are individuals who practice in isolation every single day. And they're out there literally making battlefield decisions on their own every single day. This is the opportunity for them to bring something they're struggling with clinically to the table, get feedback from the rest of the group, answers they can use chairside the very next day. So there's that instant gratification factor. But a bigger part of it is, not only am I learning from the group's solution to my challenge, but I'm learning from the challenges and problems that everybody else has.
Right.
And when I watch a club do this for the first time, the best part is watching the facial expressions change about 15 or 20 minutes into it as they're going, holy crap, I'm not alone.
Right.
I'm not the only one who's struggling with this or with that. There are other people. I'm not as bad as I keep telling myself I am. Now, that's not everybody, but we all have that self-talk cycle, and sometimes we get down on ourselves, and it's nice to have a group to help remind you that, you know what, we all struggle with things, and you're not alone in this.
Right. And that is absolutely key. Now, I could also speak to your education too, because when you create the curriculum, the Seattle Study Club isn't bringing in small-time speakers. These are big-time speakers, like real big-time speakers. You talk about Jerry Sheesh and Bob Barges, Bill Robbins, you know, you got Brian Schroeder, you got John Coyce. I mean, these are real amazing clinicians. I don't know how you've set that up where you can bring those people to even the smallest towns.
It's the way we structure the club and build the budget. The clubs are self-funded and tend to be able to, the tuition that is collected from the membership funds the program. So in essence, it's a fancy pooling of resources. And it's that pooling of resources that allows a club in Tullahoma, Tennessee to bring Jerry Sheesh in for a full day program or a hands-on on anterior aesthetic veneers. So again, part of it's the relationships, the connection. But it's this group of individuals, 18, 20, 25 clinicians who are pooling their resources. And now I'm not sitting in a lecture hall with 300 other people listening to Jerry Sheesh. I'm with 20 people. And even that then becomes a much more interactive environment where I'm learning more, where I'm engaged more. Again, just an overall part of the beauty of the structure of a local study club.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, other things I'm just curious about is that you see the journey of a lot of these other young clinicians. They come in and they get exposed to this and they really start to embrace the community effort and think a lot about it. What are some of the pitfalls or challenges as you start on this path? Other things that you would recommend if I was a 32-year-old dentist watching this and I really did want to become the complete clinician, what would you say?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I'd say join a Seattle Study Club. But again, don't allow yourself to be isolated. Whether you join the Seattle Study Club or not really is irrelevant. It's don't allow yourself to be isolated. Find a peer group to connect with, and a peer group that you connect with on a regular basis in a safe environment will change your connection to dentistry.
Right.
If you're doing it by yourself, you're in trouble ultimately long term. And the ability to be exposed to and connect with people all over the country, not just in your community, but all over the country, whether it's a Bill Robbins or a Jerry Sheesh. I mean, we have members of study clubs who will say, look, if I get stuck, I pick up the phone and I call Bill Robbins in San Antonio and ask him what he'd do. Or I call Pat Allen in San Antonio and ask him what he'd do. And that, again, is the beauty of creating that community. Somebody once said to me that what the study club environment has become is really creating a community of excellence. And to get involved in a community like that allows you to elevate your game.
Yeah, absolutely. And those guys will answer the phone. Bill Robbins will pick up the phone. Pat Allen, they're amazing in that respect. So,
yep.
And typically, this is a question that comes up, and I'll ask you directly. The Seattle Study Club, who starts it? Is it always done by a specialist? Because it isn't necessarily always specialist. There are a few GPs that run Seattle Study Clubs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. What we would refer to as the director of a study club does not have to be a specialist. It's anyone who's interested in helping create a community like this in their community that allows everyone to get better at what they do, that creates shared responsibility, that is focused on comprehensive diagnosis and treatment planning, but also again, just throwing out the buzzwords, but becoming a complete clinician, right? Health and well-being, behavioral sciences, finance, management, personal development, and doesn't want to go about it by themselves, doesn't want to have to reinvent the wheel. Honestly, in 22 years, I think I have pretty much screwed this up every way you can. Although I surprise myself daily by screwing it up in a new way. But we can help shorten that learning curve. It's very much comparable to trying to exercise or work out by yourself or hiring a personal trainer or working out with a buddy. When you've got somebody who's kind of kicking you in the butt and coaching you and guiding you and helping you with that, you're a lot more likely to do it and stick with it. You know it's good for you. But if you're doing it by yourself, it gets difficult. It gets challenging. Coming up with new ideas for the curriculum all the time. You know, there's no support network, no coaching network to say, oh yeah, we've been through that. Here's how you handle this.
Right. And also too, I'm going to speak to the undercurrent here too, because somebody would say, well, why would I start a club or why would I be involved in a club? Is it going to be a specialist just wanting to get more referrals? Your intention and the heart and the core value has to be extremely pure. And I'm just going to pull out two GPs that I really respect. You got Fred Mara up in New York. He's a restorative dentist, an amazing restorative dentist. You also have Brian Schroeder, who's a restorative dentist, and they do it because they love it. They're not looking for anything in return. And we see a lot of periodontists get in this, and they come in with one thing. Look, this is about growing people. This is not about how many implants are you going to send me or how all this works. What happens is everybody wins. I mean, it's like a multiplication effort that you could never get your, I mean, everybody that touches the club wins. Ultimately, it's the patient that wins, but your heart and soul. So if you're the specialist that's looking at this, or if you're the GP, the heart and soul of the core values is solid behind leadership.
100%. This is not about generating more referrals. In fact, if it were, it would be a discipline-specific study club. Right. It would be an implant study club, or it would be an ortho study club, or whatever it is we're looking to generate more referrals for. This is really about comprehensive diagnosis and treatment planning and the team approach to that. So elevating the level at which the patients are taken care of. And if that is first, the rising tide lifts all boats. Everybody gets better at what they do. They recognize more of the dentistry that can be delivered. They become better at helping their patients understand the value of that dentistry. And everybody does a higher level of dentistry. So the patients win, the general practitioners win, the specialists win. But if it's about referrals, it's going to fall apart. If it is self-serving, it's not worth doing because it won't last more than a year and a half. It'll fizzle out. People will smell that stuff a mile away.
They will. They will.
That's why you come back to our core purpose, as I would state it, our core purpose, and this is not a mission statement or a vision statement. And if anybody out there has them, I apologize in advance, but typically those things are so wishy-washy. They're, well, we're going to have excellent customer service.
Right.
I don't know what that means. Does that mean in a dental practice, we're going to have McDonald's level customer service? You'll be in and out of the practice in 2 minutes or less, you know, or Ritz-Carlton. So I know I'm being semantic, but I think a purpose, if it's well worded, gives us a place to ground the decisions we make on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And our purpose, as I see it, is to create an environment for growth and change with intention.
Yeah.
So we're not preaching a clinical religion, and there's nothing negative about that, but it's not the Coice way, the Panky way, the LVI way, the, you know, pick your clinical philosophy. In fact, I love when we get those individuals going head to head in a treatment discussion because they're opening each other's eyes. But it is about creating that environment in which everybody is elevated and we're meeting the needs of the individual clinicians. So the term we've started using lately is helping our clubs create a bespoke curriculum because your needs, Kirk, are very different than mine are, and we might be in the same study club. So the curriculum I develop needs to address both of us.
Right.
And that can be challenging, but we've got ways to do it.
Yeah, I've got a lot of weird needs. So, but that's a whole other subject. But what you're doing is you're creating a community, an opportunity where people can get connected. And it's not just a club. I mean, it's changing the world. It's changing the world of dentistry, and it's hugely transformational. So here's one of my last questions, Gray. Like, let's say I'm watching this. Where do I go? How do I get involved with the Seattle Study Club? Where do I start? What would you suggest?
I would suggest going to seattlestudyclub.com, coming to the website. You can explore some of the opportunities and possibilities there. You can also reach out to us directly if you want to join a club or start a club or just learn more about what the possibilities are. We also produce a couple of things that people outside of the Seattle Study Club network can have access to if they want to. One is what we call expert tips. We send them out weekly. It's a short 2-minute video clip from people within the network or within the family. You've done a couple for us.
Yes.
That just sit in your inbox and you can watch them when you want to. And it's a 2-minute expert tip. It might be on practice management. It might be on, you know, a little trick for doing a posterior onlay or managing the amount of cement in a crown or whatever it is. And you can sign up and subscribe to those and we'll send those to you free. Those come out once a week. And we do a program called Practice Inspiration, which is a 15 to 18 minute, you can think of it like a TED Talk. It's not a TED Talk because that is copyrighted and I can't use that term, but it is a short component of a lecture from experts from around the world. So Jerry Sheesh, you've done a Practice Inspiration. A number of people have done these, and those go out twice a month where you get your short 15 minute lecture on a particular subject that brings new information to the table for the individuals.
That's awesome.
It's a nice service, but again, that's the passive component of learning. It's sitting and listening and engaging, hopefully, with what you're being taught. But unless you review, discuss, debate after the fact, most of those don't change behavior.
Yeah, sounds good. Now, you can find those links on the Seattle Study Club website for the expert tips and the practice inspiration to sign those up.
Yes, both of those are on the website as well.
Okay, so we'll put a link in the side. So if you're watching this right now, just look to the side. You'll see the links and you can sign up for them. Just get them. They are fantastic. They're not just little tips. These are world-class clinicians giving you like their secrets.
Yes. And
they are fantastic. So really, really good. So don't even think about it. Just sign up for that. So Greg, thank you very much for being on, brother. You and I are going to do a bunch of these on different components. And I'm just so grateful that you now take my phone calls, which I'm so excited about. So
thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thank you for watching. If you're watching the Best Practices Show, we really, really appreciate you as a viewer. And if you love this, please do me a favor, hit the share button and let your friends know about it because we want to keep bringing great content. So if you have a great suggestion or if you want to ask Greg a question, please enter it in the feed. Greg's fantastic. He'll get back to you and answer the question directly. So until we see you next time, hope you have a great day. Keep watching. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Kirk. Bye.